Definitely don't talk to my mom in between the spaces because...
Okay. Oh, I won't.
Oh, is she?
I mean, I usually touch base with her on Saturdays.
She'll send it out.
But
no, she'll call FX.
Do you guys do that? Like, talk to your parents about it between the phases?
And then they add all sorts of
weight. Yeah. I don't do
Whatever happened to that thing?
Yeah.
Oh, my
God.
What thing? Oh, that's right.
Stab me in the gut.
I think it's best to not... really, you want to share with them, but you almost can't.
You have to keep them in the dark until
the whole process has gone through.
Yeah.
And either you have it or you don't. And you're like, what's going on? Well, I had this thing, but it didn't work out.
Yeah, which is kind of challenging for parents. I feel like maybe now it becomes a weird thing where it's like you almost, then what do you talk to your parents about if you can't talk to them about your day to day? And they're like, so what's been going on with you? And then you don't have, like, you not only do you have nothing provable, but you can't even say what you have
what you
done.
Do, and it becomes this thing where you're like, I have nothing tangible to talk about with you.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, what's happening in your life? And you're like, nothing.
But every day is differently the same, but I work very hard. I don't know what else to tell you.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's so bizarre to tell people that.
And it's just hard because if you're not in, it's a hard thing to explain, especially to those who are so far removed from what's going on. Because my mother, who has been on this show,
Marianne Pietro Gerard,
she tries hard. She tries hard to understand what's happening.
That's cool. That's the thing is that, like, what's impossible to understand is that it is nonlinear. It's almost impossible for us to understand it yet, and we're living it.
Yeah.
So.
It's
like almost scientifically impossible.
Completely impossible.
It makes no sense.
But it's all driven by superstition.
Well, yeah, it can be.
Right? I mean, that's the thing. It's all superstition.
It can be.
You don't talk about the job because you're afraid talking about it is going to
release some kind of energy.
Yeah.
Well, you think it's an energy thing into the world, but ultimately, I mean, there's no... It's not based in fact. It's based in superstition, in belief.
Sure. Yeah, but there are a lot of laws that we don't know about. So then it's weird because there's also magical laws around, like, you want to book a job, book a fucking ticket.
Yeah, yeah.
Get out of town.
No, but there's no magic to that. I'm going to tell you what that is. There's no magic to that.
He's a scientist. Yeah, he doesn't believe in magic.
No,
or love.
I like this.
You don't care. You don't want the job. Mm-hmm. You book the job.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
We talked about this before. You.
Yeah, but that has a certain magic to it.
That's 100% magic.
It's not magic. It's attitude. It's attitude. You go in and you don't care, and suddenly there's no pressure. You're not putting any pressure on you because you don't want the job. And what the person sees when you come in the room is somebody who's confident, right? Because they don't, you know, you don't have somebody who's like begging you for a job. So the cashier
is
like,
you're not asking, is this right in performance? Mm-hmm. Basically, you're not asking, is this right with your performance?
Mm-hmm.
You're saying, this is what I'm doing.
That's right.
Perfect.
And that's
way of phrasing
the main difference. But here's the other thing is that there are other little ways in which that doesn't necessarily add up, because it's like, I'm not the most like socially fluid person in the world. Like, I consider myself to be a little bit socially anxious unless I know people and know people well, and that's okay. And so that's not necessarily a great thing in this trade.
Mm-hmm. Right.
People who have like a real natural fluidity when it comes to socializing have a real like advantage, or that's a great skill for this.
Yeah.
It's like being in sales. Like, welcome to my barbershop. Like, have a great time at my party here is like the attitude you want to have.
Yeah.
And
yet
it's not something that comes necessarily easy to me, but I have ownership of who I am, and the fact that that's like sort of not the most. I'm just, you know, I think you have to, if you spend an entire lifetime like having a little bit of a eater at parties or whatever, then you have to have some ownership of that.
Totally.
And that's
of course
who you are. And
well,
so,
not 100% of jobs are booked because the person was friendly with the casting director. Some
people
you go in and they want the person who's professional, not the chatty Kathy.
Right. No, and that's probably true. But I do feel like it seems like it's a bit provable that
you have a disadvantage.
People have a rapport.
Well, absolutely.
There's a thing. They chat them up and they get everything.
But I don't know if they necessarily get the job all the time, but they definitely will get called in for auditions.
Yeah, but it is a numbers game.
It's a numbers game. Right.
You got to go in there and I think what Emily was saying is correct. It's like you're doing the performance. You're not asking if it's right. You're doing you're being a selfish actor in the sense that, like, you're not being selfish in disregarding what your scene partner or what the scene calls for, but you're being a selfish actor by just focusing on what you're doing. Mm-hmm. And then it creates like a vacuum between the audience and you. Mm-hmm. So there's like a vacuum. So then they're pulled in, you know,
another
to what
way
you're
to
doing.
Say it, like, oops, in terms of like comedy or stand up is that, never pander. Mm-hmm. So you're never asking the audience, you're never going to the audience. It should matter. It can't matter at all.
Yeah.
Whether or not the audience will come with you, because that is immediately pandering. Like, totally. If it matters to you whether the audience comes with you, it's immediately pandering. And I'm not saying that, like, I invented that. I've heard that great advice from, you know, veteran people before, like, never pander. And I can't even say that I always achieve it. I go through weird phases where I'm just like,
Or like you're doing a scene and like half your focus is out to the casting director or the audience. It's
something
the fucking
weird.
Worst.
Do you like me? Do you like me? Am I doing okay? Do you
it's
like
your internal
it?
Camera and you're watching yourself. Yeah. And you just kill yourself that way. So let's be selfish for a second.
Yeah. What?
Why?
And focus
well,
on
I just
what,
want to say, I want
on
to
do
say one.
Doing.
What is this? We're having a discussion. I want to bring it back to Emily's first point.
Yes.
And in all that, you walk away from an audition or a callback or something, and you can't have a conversation with your family or whoever that someone may be on the other side of a phone, because in explaining to them, be like, in your mind, you had a successful day. Mm-hmm. You had a great audition. That's success. That's mm-hmm. a successful day. You try to share that success with someone on the phone that, well, you know, all like, well, did you get paid for that?
Could only be comprehended.
Did you get paid for that? Are you getting health insurance because of that?
Right.
And then it was like, well, no, but it was good. And what show was it for? It was for... It
doesn't exist yet.
Okay, but well, what about those soap operas? Why don't you go on one of those soap operas? No, that's not what I'm telling you. I had a successful day. I had a great audition. That's success.
Right.
Well, I don't understand. How is that successful?
Yeah. I just started thinking of this in terms of like a stand-up bit recently. I don't think I'll ever be able to do it, but just the idea that, like, you know, you're an adult when you can finally say to your parents when they're like, what did you do all day? Nothing. It's fucking genius. That's the genius of it. Like, you
know, I don't do anything.
The ownership of it. And then at the same time, what did you get paid for? Nothing. The injustice of it. You know, like,
you're on either.
You're outraged for yourself.
Way.
That's awesome.
Yeah. But like, I sometimes will tell my parents with the hope, because you're saying like, we can't expect our parents to understand it because we're so deeply embedded, immersed in it, and we can't even understand it.
Yeah.
But sometimes I tell my parents something with the hope that because they're not in it, that they're so not in it, that they'll have some, like, broad perspective on what
you,
I'm doing.
Are you hoping for it to be profound perspective as
I'm just
because
hoping
of
that
how
they're
going to
be like,
it is?
Yeah. They're going to be like, you know what, Greg? We're way up here on a different planet, and we see what you're doing, and it's okay.
Yeah.
You're doing okay, but you're just off in this way a little bit.
Well, also another side of that is them taking a little nugget and wanting so badly for your success that they just completely translate it into something else. For example, if I just had a little job as a PA for a New Year's Eve show, I go home a month later and I bump into someone I know, and all of a sudden, word's on the street that I'm taking over a New Year's Eve show.
Wow.
Oh, I heard you got a new show on television.
I heard
it's coming
up. Over Hollywood.
Hollywood's really, really knocking your door down.
Okay, so the question is, how hard do you work to correct them?
At that point, with this whoever I'm interacting with, I don't care. That's their journey.
Right.
Let them run with it.
And would that be considered bad energy?
Would that? No. Because it's not mine. It's their energy. It's for them.
That's good energy. Because that energy is building you up.
It is. It's building you up, and who knows? Maybe somebody...
Building the agreement of where I'm at and what I'm doing.
Of your success. Built on a house of lies.
High level of success.
You seem like you've had too many conversations with too many actors about energy.
No. Well,
he just can't handle the magic. He really can't.
Look, this is...
It's magic.
Well, I would say that there... Like, what is... intangible and definite is momentum. I mean, that's necessarily tangible, but it is a true, absolute.
Momentum is a scientific.
Certainly a scientific thing.
Because I think that it connects directly to attitude, your attitude. It affects you.
Mm-hmm.
And if you want to call that energy, that's fine. But I think that it has that You know, it's momentum. You're going in with confidence. That's what momentum gives you.
Mm-hmm.
You just book three jobs, you come in even more confident than you were, mm-hmm. you know, well, obviously, when you book no jobs. Because mm-hmm. When you haven't booked in a long time, there's an air of desperation.
Sure.
And then you struggle to fight that desperation, which sometimes looks even worse, because mm-hmm. then it just smells like desperation with perfume on it.
Mm-hmm. What's cool about mm-hmm. desperation is that at a certain mm-hmm. point, it translates into complete lack of care, which then is freedom.
Yes.
So then you're back at square
or
one.
Or decisive confidence.
Yeah. You're just like, you know,
I have no choice. I gotta try something.
Yeah. Right. Right. Everything that I've been doing does not work, so I'm going to fucking do this now. Yeah.
Or you're living on the street.
Mm-hmm.
Nah, that never happens. Mm-hmm. That never happens.
Hooray for Hollywood.
There are a lot of good-looking, tan, shirtless people out there that would make a difference.
Yes. Yeah. Talking to themselves. I think they're in the endless life audition.
Yeah.
Do you guys worry about losing your homes in this business?
Me? My home? Yeah. My mortgage?
Do you ever think, like,
your rental?
Man. Larry David has a great quote about how when he first, like, before he was successful at stand-up, he would walk around New York City and look at different places in the city and be like, oh, that'd be a good place to sleep. For real, isn't that great?
Yeah. Well, yeah. So neurotic.
So neurotic.
Picking out.
I've had those thoughts
you're
before.
Like,
you know what? I don't, it's funny you say that. I don't think about that'd be a good place to sleep, but I see jobs that people have or things that people are doing, and in my mind, I'm like, I guess I could do that.
Oh, yeah. Mills has a good one. Yeah. What's yours, Mills? We were talking about that last week.
Oh, to become a cop?
Yeah.
There you go.
Well, I mean, we were sort of on the same page. But I've had that threat to the universe a few times where it's just like, but it mostly comes from watching too many procedurals and The Wire at the same time and then being like, I'd be a good detective.
But in order
to be a detective, you got to be a beat cop first.
You're just going, You're playing the rules of the TV show.
Yeah.
So would you be a snarky cop? Would you be fun? Would you be, like, hard-nosed? I mean, you know, who are you casting yourself in the life role of cop?
Well, first of all, I would cast myself right into detective.
Oh,
yeah, no, be cop. Me too.
Because that's the part of my brain I think I would enjoy using. I think I would be good at it, because I'm very good at problem
forensic
solving.
Forensic analysis.
Yeah. We've already done that. We've already cast ourselves as detectives.
Mm. Yeah, me and Brian do that.
That's right.
We went right into detective land. Mm-hmm. We went right past the beat cop. Not to be confused with a Keystone cop.
Is that the Keystone Cop song, Brian?
No, but he's just a little trumpet song for himself.
So let's take a second once again to be a little selfish.
Brian, why don't you introduce the fucking show?
And let's introduce the show.
Wow, so much aggression. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the show.
Finally, I know. Typical.
God.
Wow. My name is Brian Gerard.
Yeah, it is.
I'm here with Robert Scheid.
That's me.
Gregory Hoyt.
Mm.
Good evening, ladies.
And our esteemed guest, Emily Maya Mills.
Oh. Welcome back, Emily. Hey.
Welcome. All right.
You all right? You have asthma?
What's going on there?
A lot of breathing.
It's black lung.
I am the sexiest woman alive.
It's true.
You know, it comes across in your voice. It really does.
Thank you.
Would you like another cool cigarette?
A cool, I like a Newport.
A Newport?
Newport. You know what that sounds for? Never eat wet pussy on a rainy Tuesday.
Oh, yeah! Here you go, madam. Take it.
Oh,
that's a 6-incher.
They say there's like fiberglass in these.
Yeah.
So I like them.
It's what makes them glow blue.
Newport. Never eat wet pussy on a Tuesday.
I don't think I've ever heard. There was an R
there.
I
thought I would get it.
What about Newport?
Pretty close.
Newport Lights.
Isn't that like a oxymoron or something?
Yeah, there's no way.
I'm sure. All of them are.
They're all anything lights. Light.
Now, wait a second. There were some former smokers at this table.
Sure. Mm, me.
Everyone smokes at this table. Yeah,
except for me. Hang on. Smoked or still smokes?
Never.
Used to.
Hey, you know.
Brian still
smokes.
No, I don't smoke.
Okay, so what did you smoke?
Okay, go ahead. You want to start first, Mills?
Because I didn't, so that's mine. I'm no smoke.
You didn't smoke, no.
Go ahead.
Joints laced with DMT.
Yeah. Way down the rabbit hole.
What is that? What?
I've been down that rabbit hole.
I mean, I did smoke cigarettes as a child.
Naturally.
Of course.
Everybody does.
Who doesn't?
Right?
when you grow up in a city.
No, but it was like, what brand, you know, were you a...
Oh, what did I smoke?
Lucky Strike? No, that's a match, isn't it? Or is
no, Lucky Strike,
no, Lucky Strike is...
Oh,
a that's brand.
A cigarette. Oh, okay, sorry.
It's like
the
a original. Rare... Yeah, it's the original.
Marlboro.
I think I smoked...
Menthol.
Yeah, when I was in... When I was a really little kid,
Oh my god!
I smoked Newports.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and then
like when you were like 8, 9, that kind of.
Probably like 12.
Yeah, yeah.
Aren't those like the super skinny?
No, that's Capri.
That's Capri. Sorry.
Or Virginia Slims.
Oh, that's right, that's the other one. Yes, yes.
And then I smoked Marlboro Reds when I was like a freshman in high school.
Mm-hmm. Is that moving up in the classiness factor?
No,
that's
like,
harder.
I don't know. They're all those were all pretty hard. That's
that would
be
insane. That would be moving up.
I guess so, but I mean,
going from Newport to Marlboro would be a step up.
But I think they're equally just kind of hardcore.
Absolutely,
they're just like full,
wicked hardcore.
Full
was this like flavor. No filter or
no? They had
you
no
never
filter.
Got that far,
but they had the small, pretty small. It was like old, like 1980s construction worker cigarettes, like the Newport Reds. You're talking the ones that came in the red packet. I mean the Marlboro Reds.
Yeah, but I mean they still have them.
Are you
guys
aware of the new wave of tobacco? How the American tobacco industry is about to collapse right underneath.
Well,
itself?
I'm sure it is, and deservedly, but why?
Because
these e-cigarettes.
Oh yeah.
Yep.
Good.
Not only there's so many companies popping up, and I just saw an ad on television, which. I thought
really?
It was illegal to do smoking tobacco ads. On television.
Yeah, but it's not tobacco.
Right.
Not
tobacco. So that's why they're doing ads on television. And it literally looks like a cigarette, looks like a cigarette pack, and it comes out, and it's Enjoy. N-G-O-Y is the name of it.
N-G-O-Y?
You better get some kickbacks.
Sorry, N-J-O-Y.
Engoy.
I think it's J, Enjoy. Sean Parker... Who was the Facebook guy and the Napster guy, the original Napster guy?
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Billionaire, 10 times over.
Yeah.
Just like invested like $75 or $100 million or something into this company because he's like, I'm going to take over American Tobacco. And the truth is, I think he might.
Sean Parker.
These,
Sean Parker.
It's
getting
really
in on the ground floor. That rascal.
That guy.
Does it ever stop with him?
Playing
no.
JT.
God.
Yeah. Murdering.
I mean, killing it.
Well, it's a smokeless delivery system of a narcotic, of a
it's,
drug.
It's all it is taking nicotine.
So
right. It's exactly
your
what it
audience is addicted. And now you say,
but
well, and you're not going to get lung cancer.
But he's going so far, right. He's going so far as he has hired, like, a former surgeon generals. He's like, how much are you making? I'm going to double it for you to come and do research so that you can prove that these things do not cause lung cancer.
Yeah,
well,
this is the outcome
genius.
I want. Yeah.
It's genius, and it's not the worst work.
No.
Sure.
No.
Considering, like, if it actually does
it actually
save.
Does.
Yeah, yeah. No, that's very
it's
true.
It's actually amazing if it works.
Mm-hmm.
Greg, what did you smoke?
Okay, I started in the game around the same age as Mills. And I remember the first cigarette that I ever smoked was a Marlboro Red. So it was I can remember as plain as day. And I smoked it, and I actually...
The whole thing?
Not the whole thing, but like half of it, and I felt like my ears were going to fall off. I was so like, you know, wanting to throw up, but not able to. And I remember it was on the golf course.
Oh, my God.
A 12-year-old playing golf.
What is the point of any of it?
It makes
so
no
gross.
Sense. Then I continued to smoke Marlboro Reds on... The down low, always on the golf course. I was a big smoker on the golf course. After that experience, I fake smoked for years where I would just like put it in my mouth and just blow it out. You know what I mean?
Right.
And
that's
nobody called me on
what
it.
What a goddamn racket it is.
It's such it's such bullshit.
It's for the look.
Yeah.
Okay, at that age.
It's for the look, but it's also like, I think the whole thing is an act of like, territorialism over one's own body, or like you know, it's an act of retaliation or
aggression.
Is it ownership, or are you what you own your own?
It's a type of revolt or something. It's like you can't tell this is bad. We know it's bad.
But this is my life. That kind of a thing.
But this is my space to pollute. This is my body to
got
pollute.
It.
Like,
got
there's
it.
A little bit of that. I
absolutely.
Feel like.
Rebellion.
It's rebellion against, like, you know, yourself and nature. You know, it's kind of like...
Huh. Do most people?
Off on that.
That's the biggest thing that they're. You can't even conceptualize it when you're doing it. I don't think, but that's like the biggest thing
sure.
to it. I think.
Absolutely. Like after the fact, you look back and you see that that's
yeah.
what happened.
I will fight you, nature.
I will invite death.
Yeah.
Not only will I face it, I'll be like double guns, middle finger. Like,
do you think that's why kids text and drive, or is that just because they're stupid?
No, that's because they have no other way to interact with each other.
I don't know why that
wow.
was.
I don't know why that was.
Because you said it as if it was so definitive.
It's very definitive.
Like, I was like, I'm not sure.
I'm not sure that's true.
That's it. But you're
no,
so
I don't know about that.
That's because they have no other way to act with each other.
Interact
with each other. But that doesn't have anything to do with the driving.
Texting
I think it's their terrible it habits are born out of...
Is it
yeah,
you know, this whole
bit,
double guns? It's
yeah,
like
yeah,
I don't care. This
yeah.
is my life. I have control over it. I'm mm-hmm. gonna drink and drive. I'm gonna text and drive. I'm gonna mm-hmm.
I'm gonna drink
smoking.
And text and drive
and
yeah.
smoke cigarettes.
it's a way of dancing with danger, and which is I guess an ultimate claim
well,
of freedom. You
yeah,
know?
It is. But also texting. Quite frankly, I think texting is just more of a response. Like everyone's so used to like immediately
yeah.
responding to texts and tweets and everything right now. I just think that driving happens to be an activity that takes no pun intended the back seat to them answering their texts because
mm-hmm. mm-hmm.
they're just so used to automatically engaging.
Bing. Bing.
They can't.
Bing.
It is it physically. To like a 18, 19, 20-year-old right now in our society, in the world, really,
yeah,
it physically is painful for them to get a Bing on your phone and not immediately
and not
check
it.
Yeah.
It's like Pavlov's dog.
You
yeah.
can't not look at it.
They're totally...
You're immediately... And
are.
I'm even that way.
You're like,
yeah.
Amanda, who is it? What?
Yeah.
Even if I don't physically turn, my awareness goes,
Yeah.
It's called FOMO. Which stands for fear of missing out.
Mm,
and that's
really?
What, yep, it's called FOMO. So many of us have it. Social media has created it. You
well,
have
we had it before
missing,
social media,
involved.
And this is probably
oh,
it's
true.
Like this. It's the velocity at which we're dealing
it's
with.
Made
this.
It so accessible
yeah.
to not miss out.
It was the same when growing up, whenever you got home and you know, like your mom and dad would be like, oh, hey, Emily called. What? Is that a machine? Did
what?
She leave a message? What'd she say?
Yeah.
What? Did,
she
call, did you talk to her?
Did you talk to her? Why'd you talk to her?
Like that...
Yeah.
That was all that is. The same.
Yeah.
It's the same feeling. It's the same thing. It's just we have it now, at least probably individually 100 times a day.
So Emily, mm-hmm. what message did you leave him when you called?
It was that. She was just laughing.
Yeah. Yeah. Just laughing. You didn't want to hear that message, Brian.
Yeah.
No.
It was something about going to the movies.
Yeah,
cigarettes.
Probably.
What are you smoking nowadays, Brian?
I've never smoked.
Emily,
how?
Interesting.
One of the things about Brian is you'll come onto the show and you'll be really honest and vulnerable, and then it'll go around the table and he will not reciprocate.
Mm.
So, do most people transition?
That's
why I'm
hearing. Didn't go to the movies with him.
Yeah,
ooh, vulnerability.
It's attractive.
Number one attractive.
It is attractive.
Trait.
Be vulnerable. Wait a second. So, Greg, you never said where you ended.
Oh, I ended my reign of terror on Camel Lights.
So is this is it common for people to transition? You know, like, oh, I started here. Because it sounds like you both did that.
I went through Stasis.
Oh, yeah. I went through, like, I went all the way through, I think, what are they? Parliaments?
Yeah, I did Parliaments for a minute.
American Spirits.
Oh,
the
yeah.
End.
Oh,
it's
American
actually,
Spirit. I saw that all the time in Boulder. That was
I might
a
have
very
been
bold.
On American Spirit.
Like, healthy spirits.
Yeah. It's all natural.
Yeah.
Right?
I'm
that whole thing.
Saving myself.
Now,
and I'm saving American Indians.
Now, this is all going back to the reservation, right?
Yeah, totally.
Having been smokers, do you guys think you would experiment with these new e-cigarettes knowing that they would not cause lung cancer?
I just think that they're pointless. Like, why get addicted?
Yeah.
Well,
they
answer the craving. So I guess the question within that question, Brian, is do you still have cravings?
Mm.
Do you have a craving for a cigarette ever, Greg or
occasionally.
Emily?
Yeah.
Occasionally. Like,
occasionally.
You know.
Right.
If,
some people say
know.
It's like drinking related. Usually if I'm drinking, I want to.
Yeah. I mean, I guess every once in a while. It's honestly, I think it kind of shows up more when there's an itch to kind of blow the rules or something.
Ah.
You know what I mean? I think it has. And that's probably why
it's
associated
thing.
With drinking.
Guns.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Even at this age, you're still doing it.
I don't think that'll ever go away.
I don't think it ever stops.
Never. I'll probably, if I live, I will live. I'll live to 120 years old.
Like okay, I was like, I thought you're ending it. If I live.
No. As I get older, if like, honestly, God willing, if I were to live until like 80 years old, I probably would start smoking again at like 80 years old.
Yeah.
Wait, is that once again, is that because of the double guns or because you like smoking that much?
Well, because at that point, well, I kind of like smoking. Like, really? You know, I didn't hate it. I hated knowing what it was doing to me. I hated knowing that it would rip me from the earth and away from my family and my future wife and kids at some point.
Yeah, that's
like, I really had that heavy. Big right. sort of like yeah. awareness of what I was doing.
Yeah.
I hated that, but I didn't hate cigarettes.
Wow.
I did. There I hated it the whole time.
See, males were not
really different. Weird. It was like something because it started so early. And I actually smoked for a long time without. I think like at this like baseline of about maybe 4 cigarettes a day
mm-hmm.
for the almost the whole time I smoked. So it was like I was really repelled by it, but I somehow that
broke
was,
through.
Yeah, no, I mean I was repelled by it, but that was like supposedly was even to doctors it was like that's not that dangerous an amount, but it was every time. Shame. Like the idea that you have of like being ripped away from your family and friends.
Yeah.
It was like microscopic to me. Every breath. Like why would I and then I would like relegate myself to like have to do it by the dumpsters. I would never smoke inside.
Shame
I have to
yourself.
Like Yeah, just it was terrible. It was just like you know down. This is wrong. You're smarter than this.
I started doing totally. That like after at in the last I went back and forth. I quit for like a year, then went back for a year, quit for two, went back, now quit for two mm-hmm. again. And when I went back, like leading up to the first time quitting, I was hating myself. When I went back, I hated myself. Every time I've gone back, I've hated myself. And the last time I went back, I started to get not only deep shame, but terror.
Because
I was like, oh my God, you're back again. This is crazy.
Mm-hmm.
And then the pleasure there was not there. But I'll tell you what, I don't think I would do the e-cigarette thing because I feel like I'm such a crazy boy that I would start the e-cigarette thing and be like, I might as well have a cigarette if I'm going to do
and
this.
And then you'd be like, I might as well have heroin, but that's
right.
And
then I'll sign up with
it. And then you're going to have e-heroin, which is where you just rub the needle.
Rub heroin on your armpits.
Well, I mean, part of
topical.
The double fingers up, fuck you, to the world is like, ripping the life out of you. That's a horrible thing to say, but really that's what it boils down to. So in a way it's like, it's great for smokers to curb this desire to smoke actual cigarettes. It's great, but why would anyone? I actually know someone who started smoking e-cigarettes. Had never smoked cigarettes before.
No way.
Yeah,
and just went right to the e's.
And
oh
got
my God.
Addicted, and got totally addicted.
Yeah, it's like pure nicotine. Yeah. It must be insanely addictive.
Yeah.
Now, one of our listeners tried the e-cigarettes for a while.
Who?
Gijaroon.
Oh, Gijaroon.
Yeah, and she. One thing that I heard from her was that with the e-cigarette. You don't know when you've smoked a cigarette.
Yeah.
No so, way.
Because there's a cartridge, right? And
you just
smoke.
Yeah, people just like kind of smoke just endlessly.
You're supposed to do like a certain number of breaths, mm-hmm. like
oh
three
God.
Or something. But smokers are used to, I guess, breathing a lot more. I mean, you
it's
smoke
like
the whole
puffs.
Thing. Yeah. So
you're doing like 20 puffs of straight nicotine?
You could be doing, yeah. Well,
turn
exactly.
green. You're just like, oh,
no idea.
Crazy. Yeah.
Just constantly all day.
That's
long.
What I remember most clearly about. I visited Egypt when I was like 15 years old, and what I remember most clearly is just cigarettes, like never leaving the lip, just burning all the way down.
Oh my God.
Ash. Inhale, exhale, inhale, exhale.
I was going to say, were these people dead? I mean, were you watching a body?
They were lifeless and close to death.
They were just bodies on the side of the road smoking.
And like, people would come by and just stick a new one in. It's kind of like one of those prayer candles. It's a cigarette. We light this for you.
The family are all around praying for them to get better. As the cigarette gets to the bottom, they light another one.
We need another Capri.
Is that Egyptian?
It is Egyptian. Yes.
Totally
Egyptian.
Sounds like Lenny and Squiggy.
Quiet, you.
Thinking Balky.
Yeah, that was a little Balky. Yeah, that
works. Miss Mills, we have to unfortunately make our way.
You don't tell me.
Okay. Whoa, you tell her. Hey, hey.
I call those shots. That's great. Thank you so much.
Yeah.
Thanks
well,
for being
come back.
Here.
Come back and hang.
Yeah.
We'll talk more
it'd
about whatever
so weird
happens.
If I just started calling the shots.
It would be
on
cool.
The show. No.
I think next time you come, you call the shots.
Yeah, if you want.
You
to.
Run the whole thing.
That's
oh,
it.
Oh, cool.
You introduce
it's
it.
Yours. It's your show.
You say when it's done, even if it's like only been 5 minutes.
Yeah.
Done.
Whatever. You're going to do a show next, and it's all your show.
Yep.
Yeah. You guys are going to be naked.
Oh! Oh! Well, thank you, Millsy, for coming.
Thank you, Millsy.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah. On behalf of Robert Shide, Gregory Hoyt, I'm Brian Gerard.
Yeah.
We're the Shide Show.
Yay.
Newport.
Never eat wood pussy on a rainy Tuesday.
Hi, Brian. It's Emily.
Don't hang up.
Cigarettes and chocolate milk. These are just a couple of my cravings. Everything it seems I like's a little bit stronger, a little bit thicker, a little bit harmful for me. If I should buy jelly beans, have to eat them all in just one sitting. Everything it seems I like's a little bit